I always find it amazing and inspiring, and I think you do too, when a sermon, there's been no communication between the speakers, and for some reason the sermonette and the sermon go incredibly hand in hand, as if they had planned it, discussed it, worked it out, and got it all in sync. It is just so inspiring. That isn't happening at all today, but when I have seen that happen, it has been very heartwarming. Actually, they do fit in very well together, as I think you will see eventually. After living in Longview, Texas, and attending Imperial School, when I attended there, again, I was in fifth and sixth grade, and it was an incredible environment that I experienced myself. I do have to say that I did receive SWATs, but I also have to admit that I believe I deserved every one of them that I got, except maybe once. But other than that, I knew I deserved them. After moving out of East Texas, we moved up to Newark, Delaware. And actually, it's Newark, Delaware. Any of you who are from that area know it's Newark. That's because they never want to be confused with Newark, New Jersey. So they call it Newark. I moved there for seventh grade and had what I consider one of the worst years of my life in school. I was in seventh grade. It was a tough year. It was a very different environment. Instead of having the welcome family atmosphere, again, it was seventh grade. It was in a transitional time of life, and I was the new kid. In other words, the kid to pick on. And that was a traumatic experience for me. We lived there 1 year and then moved back to the same town I was born in. My father was hired by the church back in 1967, I believe it was. He was designing the feast sites. So he was hired, and we were in Pennsylvania. Then we moved to Missouri. Then we moved back to Pennsylvania. Then we moved to Wisconsin. Then we moved to Texas when convention centers started showing up, because the original plan was to build a feast site once a year all around the world. And then that was seen as being very unnecessary and impractical. So we moved back to the same town I was born in. I never attended school there. I would have been with those students that were in that grade my entire life had it not been for my father's work and our moving and the different experiences I had, all of which were learning experiences, right? Some of them very positive, some of them very uplifting, some of them quite negative, but again, education, learning experiences that we have. So we move into this new school district. And I'm wondering, how is this year going to go because of how awful the year before was? And so I'm waiting for school to begin. And interestingly, they made an announcement in the local newspaper that the teachers had gone on strike, so that the school was not going to begin when it was scheduled to begin. And I immediately thought, as an eighth grade student, this is my kind of place. This is going to be great. And then things were resolved. I don't know the details, but school was to begin. And it began on the Day of Atonement. So I was not there. And being a nervous young teenager, going into another school district that I wondered, how mean will they be here? Here I am coming into school a day late, not being there the first day, and they made an announcement. Any of you who have not been here for the first day of school, report to the auditorium. So I reported there, and I thought I'll probably be the only one there. Maybe there will be a couple others just looking at me wondering, who's this kid? Turned out there were about 15 or 20 other students. And I sat a bit away from them because I didn't know any of them. I didn't know how to interact with them. I didn't know the word hi that well. So I just sat in the back and I just listened. And interestingly enough, almost every one of them was Jewish. So they missed the first day of school because of Yom Kippur. And I thought, wow, these are Jewish. I'm sure I am going to hear the way they observe things that will just be very amazing. And I did. The first one I heard was, so how did you do? And the first guy said, man, I didn't last 3 hours. I had to have some water. And I'm going, 3 hours? And another one said, man, I had to eat. I just couldn't do it. I did a couple hours, and I'm going, you ate? Am I in the right place here? But they were probably Reformed Jews, and that's what they did. And I was very shocked about that. So it was an interesting experience for me, moving into a new area, and in a time when I was kind of trying to get my act together, you know, as a kid and all that. Well, about a week later, and this is the real experience that stands out in my mind in relation to what I want to speak about today, is I was sitting in the class. Again, I didn't know many people. I'm sitting in, it was probably our homeroom, and an announcement came, a powerful announcement, came over the public address system. David Evans, report to the principal's office immediately. And I'm like, what? What did I do? You know, I thought I'm brand new here. What is this? And I went to the, very nervously, I went there and I sat down in the reception area, and there were two other students sitting in the same area, and they looked at me and they looked at each other. And they looked at me and they looked at each other. And I just kept getting more uncomfortable as time went on, until finally the vice principal came out of his office, and one of them said to him, Mr. Evans, his name was actually Evans, he said, that's the wrong David Evans. The wrong David Evans. There was another David Evans in that school, and he was the one, fortunately, who was in big trouble. And I was so relieved, and then the vice principal gave me an extra degree of comfort by saying to me, okay, but just remember to keep yourself in line. Thank you. Welcome to Abington Heights High School, or middle school. So that was a shock to me to hear my name for the first time, that it was someone else's name. And I had another similar experience several years later, when I was living in Pasadena. I got a call in the evening, and I answered the phone just normally, and the lady seemed a little bit frantic. And she said, Mr. Evans, I'm sorry to bother you at home, but I'm working on this project, and I have to talk to you about it because we have to get this resolved, and I know I hate to bother you, but I have to talk to you about it. And she just started going on. And I said, excuse me, you must have the wrong David Evans. And she said, isn't this Mr. David H. Evans? My middle initial is H. And I said, yes, it is. Well, then you must be the right one. Boom, boom, boom. She just kept going. And I finally said, no, I am not the right one, because I do not have a clue what you're talking about, and I'm sorry, but I can't help you. And then I just slammed it. No, I didn't. I did not do that. And so she was befuddled. We ended the conversation. I picked up the phone book, looked up my name, and I had not done this before. I looked up my name, and right under my name, David H. Evans, with my phone number, was David H. Evans and Associates, and that phone number. So there was another David H. Evans who owned a business and had his business in the same area where I lived, but didn't live anywhere near there. And so again, it was a little bit puzzling to me. Here's another case of mistaken name usage, because personal names are basically just that, aren't they? They're personal. They're our names. They're what we're used to dealing with, and it's what we go by. I had the opportunity when I was working in Pasadena to assist with some of the foundation projects One of the ones that I remember in a very delightful way was working with, some of you will remember, the Little Ambassadors of Shanghai. They were all these little kids from China who were amazingly gifted musically, had been trained very precisely, and were coming to perform throughout the United States. And they were in Pasadena, and I and a friend of mine were given the job of escorting them, interacting with them, working with them, and they did speak some English. And they were cute kids, they were fun kids, and very gifted kids as well. So it was a neat experience. But while I was dealing with them, I thought, you know, I would like to have them, well, I asked them, I said, is there any name in Chinese that sounds like David? Is there any name like David that you could give me and then call me while we're interacting? And so they were thinking about it, and they're all these little kids, and they're looking at each other and looking at me and David, David. And all of a sudden, one of them started giggling and just, you know, and I'm going, oh, neat, they must have found one. And she talked to another one, and that one talked to another one, and they kept giggling more and more. So I thought, this is, because it was an innocent giggle, you know, it didn't look like there was anything negative in it at all. And I thought, this is cool, they've found a name. And so I said, well, what is it? What is it? And one of them said to me, Dabizu. And then they all started giggling again. Dabizu. I thought, that is neat. It sounds kind of like David. It's Chinese, and it links us in a special way. Dabizu, I like that. And they kept giggling. It was 20 years later when I was watching a movie, and it was about an individual. I don't remember the movie at all except this that I learned. He was interacting with Chinese people, and they called him Dabizu. Dabizu. I thought, that is great, until he revealed what it meant. The word Dabizu, picture the Chinese students, picture them looking at me. Dabizu means big nose. I was glad I did not learn that earlier in our relationship with each other. But no, I understood that, especially with the cute little Oriental children. Names usually carry quite a bit of meaning. And it can have different meaning depending on your own circumstances. I found it interesting, one article stated, social science research has found that the names we are given at birth carry substantial psychological weight. We learn to define ourselves by the names we are given. Now, that might be a bit of an overstatement, but I still find it interesting. But how can a name mean so much? Your name can lay the foundation for your personality. Then they give a couple examples of that. And then state, giving a child any kind of name, whether it be popular, and you, I'm sure, have seen the most popular names for this decade or whatever, and then you also see the most unpopular names for this decade. Popular, creative, regal sounding, or based on family or ethnic heritage, can have substantial influence on how they form their identity. And that can be in relationship to their family. It can be in relationship to their culture. Even in the day and age we live in, when we hear some that have been given names that are the same as movie stars' names. And sometimes that does have an impact on their personalities, on their development, and on their upbringing. We hear our names throughout our lives, and usually most like to hear them. In fact, it's a marketing training tool to use people's names as frequently as possible, because people like to hear their name, and it is bonding you more with them. And probably you have experienced that and do experience it. When you're dealing with salespeople who call you up, you have no idea who it is, and they say, hello, Mr. Evans, how are you doing today? Are you feeling good, Mr. Evans? I don't even know who you are. No, that's not what I do. But they use that sometimes too much, and we might note that. But again, the family or the name can often mean a lot. One comedian said that it's always good to end the name of your child with a vowel. so that when you yell, the name will carry. My parents knew that with my sister, my oldest sister. They named her Nancy, so that whenever they had to call her, it was, Nancy! And my next sister was Valerie. They just knew that that was good to do, because when they called her, Valerie! My name is David. They knew that would not be necessary. Just David. It's over, right? Okay, maybe not. My sisters are not here. They would tell you many stories. But what comes to your mind when you hear certain names? And to flip that around, what comes to others' minds when they hear your name? What comes to their mind? When we were choosing a name for our daughter, and my wife and daughter were unable to be here today because in Dallas they're having a teen speech club. Today was the first meeting they were having, and my daughter is very fearful of public speaking. You've probably heard it said, even though it's been disputed, that most people fear public speaking more than death. And that's why one comedian said, when at a funeral, it is probably the person who the funeral is being conducted for who is more comfortable than the person giving the eulogy. But anyway, when we were choosing a name for our daughter, we're very glad that she is in that program, because at first she was not going to go there. But anyway, I was very happy to hear that she would be there, and also I can tell stories about her now that she isn't here. Initially, I didn't have a daughter's name in mind when we found out we were going to have a baby. And that's because of my background. I am my father's only son. My father was an only child. His father was the only son, and he had seven sisters. His father was the only son, and he had five sisters. So I immediately thought, I am going to have a boy, because I am the only one carrying on the family line in this way, and if I do, I am going to name that child using the names that have been passed down from generation to generation. And so I had that very importantly in mind. Then we found out we were going to have a girl. Things changed dramatically. And we started looking into that. And interestingly, my father had been named the exact same name as his father. And their middle names had been carried down generation after generation because of the significance of a family member that they wanted to keep that name going. And I have the same middle name. It's Harmon. And my father decided not to call me George. That is his name. And the reason he didn't was because he was George. His father was George. So he was called Little George. And he hated that. And so he wanted to spare me that experience. And I thank him for that. But when we were choosing a name for our daughter, we kept thinking of ones that we liked, ones that stood out to us. But whenever we would share that with family members, it was amazing. They almost always would say, oh, no, that's not a good name. You know, that reminds me of your aunt from, you know, three generations back who had a bad reputation and all that. And we think, what? You know, what is this? So finally we decided we're not going to tell anyone the name we have selected until the child is born. And then we will be showing a picture of our little daughter and saying, isn't she beautiful? Her name is, give the name, and they'd say, oh, what a beautiful name. We just knew they would say that and wouldn't say anything negative at that point in time. Unfortunately, they didn't. But some, especially celebrities, change their names. I'm sure you're aware of that. Some have changed their names because of the impact their name has had or could have on their career. Some of these you may recognize, others you may not. Henry John Duchendorf Jr. Remember him? Henry John Duchendorf Jr. was a pretty good singer. He had some musical skill. He became a part of a music group that told him, if we're going to go further, you've got to change your name. Change my name? How do I change my name? Well, think of something you like to do, think of a place you like. And so he chose the name John Denver. Henry John Deutschendorf Jr. became John Denver. One of my favorite actors, David Daniel Kaminsky, a Ukrainian Jew who had skill in comedy, acting, music, and he was also told it would probably be best for you to change your name. So David Daniel Kaminsky, early in his career, changed his name to Danny Kaye, that some of you are familiar with. Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanata. Have you heard that name? Any of you younger people have heard that name? Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanata has changed her stage name to Lady Gaga. Anyway, Reginald Kenneth Dwight is now commonly known as Elton John. And one of my favorites is Thomas Mapother. I think that's how it's pronounced. Thomas Mapother IV, a name that had been passed down through generations. Thomas Mapother IV dropped his last name, stuck with the first and middle, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise. In different cultures, there are different traditions when it comes to names. My brother-in-law, who is a New York Jew, if you look in a picture dictionary for under New York Jew, his picture would be there. And he asked me one time, he said, why do you people do the things that we do? He's Jewish. Why do you do the things that we do, but you're actually going to name a child, when he found the name I had chosen for a son, with the same name as a living relative? Huh? I said, what do you mean? He said, we don't do that. I said, why not? He said, I don't know, we just don't. I said, well, actually, we don't do what you, and we get along well most of the time. We have our arguments, but then we hug each other or whatever. I said to him, we do not do what you do. We do what the Bible says to do. So that is why we have not carried on different traditions that you may have. And he accepted that. That didn't bother him one bit. By the way, he's not a practicing Jew at all. He'll have a Hanukkah meal followed by a Christmas dinner. He'll have matzo ball soup in the springtime before his lobster. So anyway, I found out when I was doing some research about the Jewish group that he didn't even know he was a part of. It was a certain sect, and there are hundreds of sects of Jews. And the reason they would not name a child with the same name as a living relative is because they believe every person has two angels, a guardian angel and a death angel. And that is why they actually have a tradition that if you are with someone who may be near death, never stand at the foot of the bed, because you will be in the way of the death angel who is there to take their soul to wherever it will go. Are you with me? Their death angel, they do not want to have a child, a baby, given the same name as a living relative. Because what if the death angel made a mistake? So I don't think death angel and intelligent go together. But anyway, that's their tradition. As we know, in some cultures, they carry names down to the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, with a lot of prestige and meaning to the individual, to the family, to the community, to the entire culture. Names can mean a lot of things. And in the Bible, we see that names have carried a great amount of meaning to people and often to God as well. So today we're going to be taking a look at names of some of the people in the Bible, the meanings of the names, and the significance they bring out, and how we should relate to that in a very serious way. It is best for me to mention that we don't know the meanings of all names. Any of you who have done research in this, it can become an obsession. But not all the names are evidently accurately translated. But some, an explanation is given, showing why that name is what it is, and the meaning is obvious, as we will see, and you'll remember if that has not already come to mind. There are a lot of lessons that we can learn about individuals, about the way God used names, and what he intends for the future as well. Let's start in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2 will begin in verse 19. This is the first time we see the name of the first man created in the image of God. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if Adam, being creative, of course, and not knowing where he came from, and God explaining to him, "You are the first who I am creating in my image and in my likeness for the plan that I have for the future. You are the man." You are the first man. What a situation that could have been. And interesting to see the way things developed, including with names, in a way that you may not have thought about before. In verse 18, we see an interesting sequence of events, because the first task we see Adam being given was dealing with the names of animals. And I think a lot of times we pause and we read over this. We don't actually see Adam being given the name Adam at this time, but we see the same Hebrew word being translated man before this verse, and then Adam afterwards. But in Genesis 2, we'll begin in verse 18. Genesis 2:18, "And the eternal God said, 'It is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper comparable to him.'" And often, what's the next thing you think of? Put him to sleep, took out a rib, Eve, right? But that's not the next thing that happened. God made this statement before he did create Eve. But we, of course, know he was planning to create Eve. He was planning to populate the earth. So he had that plan in mind from the beginning, but here's how it started. And here's what we read. "Out of the ground," the Hebrew word for ground is Adama. Ground, Adama, sound like a name, doesn't it? "The eternal God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to Adam," Adam. So out of the ground, Adama, he brought these to Adam, Adam, "to see what he would call them." To see what he would call them. "And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name." And I don't believe, if we can pause for a moment, I don't believe that God said, "Okay, they're going to come by and you have 3 seconds to come up with a name." In fact, it is believed by some that this verse in itself, as well as the names in Hebrew, and I don't know the Hebrew names of animals, but we can certainly look them up, can't we? Even if we don't understand them. That Adam named each one to describe the impact it had on him. Or something about the way it looked, something about what it was, that he named them accordingly. He gave them a name, something to recognize them by. In the Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible, under the heading name, "In biblical thought, a name is not a mere label of identification. It is an expression of the essential nature of its bearer." And I think we can see that in relationship to animals being named. "A man's name reveals his character." Again, this is dealing with biblical names. Another, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia states, "In the Bible, name is that title, label, designation by which a person, place, or thing can be known or marked out as distinguishable from another." As distinguishable from another. More fundamentally, however, name is that which, one, reveals the true nature of its bearer, so that to know the name is to know the person. They give some scriptural examples. Or two, designates the relationship that exists between entities, especially between God and his people. Between God and his people, as we see throughout the Bible, and as we see prophesied in relationship to you and to me. The Hebrew word for name is shem. Shem. It doesn't carry the same meaning that we use the English word shame for, but that is the Hebrew word for name, is shame. It is also translated renown, fame, memory, memorial, remembrance, and occurs over 800 times in the Old Testament. The name Adam itself and the word man, seemingly associated with the word ground, as we saw, can and perhaps should be a reminder that although we are made in the image and likeness of God, we are indeed made from dirt. And without God being involved in our lives, that is what we return to. Genesis 2:7, we read, "And the eternal God formed man, Adam, of the dust of the ground, Adamah, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being." In Genesis 3:19, we read, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, Adamah," again. "For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." Some of you may remember a young boy learning this principle, learning this verse, maybe in a fleeting way, but one day he ran up to his mother and said, "Mom, is it true that we come from the dust and we go to the dust?" She said, "Yes, that's true. That's very good, Tommy." He said, "Well, there's somebody under my bed either coming or going." So again, the name Adam, the word man, and indeed the word woman in English, can serve as a reminder of the incredible creation and what we are of and by ourselves, dust and ground. As previously mentioned, it is difficult to know the meaning of some names, but as you probably remember seeing in various places, after some names were given, a bit of an explanation followed. We see an example of this when Adam gave Eve her name, which means life or life-giving. That's in Genesis 3, verse 20. "And Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living." So there we see a description, an explanation of the name and what the name means. Another example is found in Genesis 4, verse 1. "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain," or in Hebrew, Cain, "and said, I have acquired, Kana, a man from the eternal." So again, it's showing a word association and why she chose the name, because she had acquired Cain. He was an acquired one. Interestingly, nothing is said regarding Abel and his receiving his name. No description is given. No sentence is stated that he was named Abel, and this is why. But his name seems to mean breath. Breath. And perhaps we would be reading into things a little bit, but we do see that sometimes names were given that had significance on someone's future. Names they were given at birth, or names they were given later in life by God. So some do associate the meaning of Abel's name, breath, to his premature death at the hands of Cain, and that he was gone as a breath of wind. Genesis 4:25, we read, "And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God," explanation, right? "For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed." And there's another expression following the name. Seth, or in Hebrew, Sheth, and don't quote me on that, I'm not an expert here, but the Hebrew word Sheth seems to be associated with appointed, Shita. Some say that the Hebrew word translated appointed, and I think they base it on the explanation that is given, is more clearly rendered substituted. Substituted, and we see in the verse, instead of Abel. That here was one given instead of, in place of, substituted for Abel. And some of you may be aware of this, but in some cultures it's interesting to note, and I have witnessed it, if they lose a child, if a child, a young child, dies, they sometimes will name the next child with that same name, because they see that in their culture, has been a return of the one that was taken away, or a substitute, one that is in its place. Perhaps it wouldn't feel very good to be called the substitute, but he was definitely highly regarded, and it was from his line that Noah, and of course Jesus Christ himself, came from. Noah's name is generally recognized as meaning, what do you think? Noah. What comes to mind? If anything. Noah's name is often recognized as meaning rest or comfort. Okay, so picture Noah, right? He's building this ship where there is no water. And he is being criticized. He is being laughed at, he and his sons. And he is being mocked as he is stating what God has told him to prophesy of what will take place with the flood, and yet his name is recognized as meaning rest or comfort. Would those people watching Noah and laughing at him think, hey, rest! Hey, comfort! No. And again, we have to think of things from God's perspective. We have to think of what God meant by what he called individuals and the meaning that he had in mind in doing so. So rest and comfort probably wouldn't be thought of by those mocking Noah. But surely as the flood came to an end, there was a new beginning. Perhaps the meaning of Noah's name was what God pictured the new beginning to be. As the original Sabbath was a time when he rested from all the work that he had done in recreating, in rebeginning his process for the whole earth, as he did after the flood, perhaps. Previously, we saw the Hebrew word for name, Shem. Noah's sons were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The Hebrew word for name and the name of Shem are the same. We saw that the Hebrew word is also translated fame, renown, and that has interesting links to Shem and prophecy in relationship to his line, which we won't go into today. Ham is seen, the name Ham, is seen as meaning to become warm or hot, and his descendants were known to occupy the hotter lands in the southern regions of the ancient world. The original meaning of Japheth is uncertain, but it is most associated with the word spacious, which seems supported based on the expansion of his descendants to the east. Genesis 9:27 reads, and it's not as clear a description, but it's interesting to see the words in relationship to how it is viewed by many. Genesis 9:27 says, may God enlarge Japheth. Enlarge. And that didn't mean that he was supposed to get nice and fat. No, it dealt with his descendants. The Hebrew words for enlarge and Japheth are recognized as related, or enlarged being the root word of Japheth. Now again, there are a lot of interesting names with interesting meanings between here and where we're going. But I think we're going to take a look at things that we see throughout the Bible, and that is when God changes names. When he actually changed names of people at what became pivotal points in their lives. And he changed their names at what they may recognize later as that was the name, that was a turning point, even if it wasn't evident right from the start. Genesis 11:27, we read, "This is the genealogy of Terah." I was surprised at what my parents sometimes described to me, that they didn't change my name to this, because sometimes they said that I was a little Terah. Anyway, Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. Nahor is a name I'm surprised my wife has not changed my name to because of the way she sometimes describes me. Nahor is often recognized as meaning snorer. Let's move on. Abram is actually looked at by some as an embarrassing name for a man. Abram. Again, some see that as an embarrassing name for either him or his father. It means high father, or it means the father is exalted. And some interpret this to mean a close relationship between father Terah and son Abram. Others say that the intended meaning would be that the father would be looked highly upon because of his son's offspring. That the father would be seen as noble, as dignified because of his son and the children that his son had. And Abram had zero. Zero. He had none. So if that were the recognition, there could have been the anticipation, the disappointment, and the negative feeling about that name that seemed never to come true. Let's look at Genesis 11, verse 29. "Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, and she had no child. His wife, Abram's wife, Sarai, which is recognized as meaning princess, perhaps her parents thought of her as a little princess. We don't know. But she was unable to have children. And in Genesis 17, we read the amazing story of both of their names being changed, and also about the son of the two of them would be blessed with about 24 years later, after Abram was promised by God that he would become a great nation and have many descendants. So in Genesis 17, I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version. "When Abram was 99 years old, the Eternal appeared to Abram and said to him, 'I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. And I will make a covenant between me and you and will multiply you exceedingly.' Then Abram fell on his face." And this is recognized to be a form of worship, a form of honor, a form of recognition of the greatness of God. So he fell on his face. "And God said to him, 'Behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be Abram, the father is exalted, but your name shall be Abraham, the father of a multitude. For I have made you the father of a multitude of nations, and will make you exceedingly fruitful. And I will make nations of you, and kings shall come forth from you.'" A lot going on in Abram, who now is Abraham's mind, huh? Especially thinking of his age, especially thinking of his wife, and wondering what would be next. as instructed by God, no longer was he to be called Abram, but was only to be called Abraham. And that is not always the case, as we shall see. It was a pivot point in his life, and the former name no longer carried significant meaning. Verse 15, and God said to Abraham, that's his new name, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, princess, but Sarah, which is often translated princess, but is also the same as the Hebrew word translated queen. And that can be seen very clearly in Isaiah 49:23, if you'd like to look there later, Isaiah 49:23. Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her. And moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will be the mother of nations. Kings of people will come forth from her. Again, as instructed by God, she was no longer to be called Sarai. And we don't find that name following this scripture in the Bible. It no longer carried a meaning that needed to be remembered. Verse 17, we see, then Abraham fell on his face. But let's pause there. Because this was not an act of worship. This was not an act of honor because of the words that follow. Abraham fell on his face and laughed. So it was a different experience. It was not the one worshiping God, but laughing, and he fell on his face. And said to himself, or said in his heart, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? That's what he said to himself. And then Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live in your sight, the son who was already there, the one God had to have been talking about, right? Because the other didn't make a bit of sense. God said, no. But Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. God told him what he was going to call his son. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for the descendants after him. Now we see no record of Abraham reporting this to Sarah. And you may not have thought of that before, but we don't see that Abraham went to Sarah and told her the news. In fact, the evidence shows that he did not. It's pretty clear he didn't tell her about this. A lot going on in his mind. Though he obviously began using the name that God had instructed him to use. Why is that interesting? Well, we see a parallel expression and experience, as we sometimes see in God's word, and this one had quite a bit of significance. Ishmael, by the way, was about 13 years old at this time. His name and what he experienced are interesting too, but we're not going into that today. In Genesis 18, we see that God appeared to Abraham, who saw three men approach his camp, and he was quick to welcome them as special guests. So this is another experience that he was having. Genesis 18, beginning in verse 9. The three who came to visit said to Abraham, they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, she's in the tent. The Eternal said, I will surely return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. And I don't think she was holding it open. She was behind the tent door listening to this conversation, this monumental conversation where it was three messengers, three representatives sent by God to Abraham to give him some news, to talk to him, to tell him something obviously significant, and she wanted to know what was going on. So she's at the tent door listening, and here's what was just said. I will return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, just as a reminder, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Old English, old Hebrew. She wasn't having kids anymore. Verse 12, so Sarah laughed to herself, it says. She laughed to herself. Inside her, she was laughing, saying, after I have grown old, and my husband is old, shall I have the pleasure? Shall I have the joy of having a child? Now remember how old she was, and that she was barren all of her life, beyond the point of any hope. And here, this is a possibility now? She's laughing to herself. The Eternal said to Abraham, why did Sarah... Now this again points out that Abraham had not talked to Sarah about this before, or she would have had some understanding of, we don't know what all this means, but we'll find out eventually. She's hearing it for the first time and she laughs, thinking this is unbelievable. Why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Eternal? At the appointed time, I will return to you in the spring, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied, saying, I did not laugh. Remember, she had laughed to herself. Nobody heard me, for she was afraid. But he said, no, but you did laugh. And we don't know exactly how it was said. We might imagine, no, but you did laugh. I don't think that's the way it was said. I think it might have been said very calmly and gently, no, but you did laugh. And then we're going on, because the relationship didn't change. It was progressive. It was becoming very meaningful in God's eyes and theirs as well. Genesis 21. Genesis 21, beginning in verse 1. And the Lord visited Sarah, as he had said. And the Lord did for Sarah, as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, remember, just a reminder, at the set time which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him. What do you think? What God told him? Isaac. He named him Isaac. Isaac, by the way, can be interpreted in a variety of forms, but the word Isaac basically means laughter. Laughter. Did God instruct Abraham long before this time to name his son Laughter as a reminder that he was not of the faith in the power of God? Or did he have him name him Laughter to remind Sarah of her laughter at the proclamation of the Almighty? We read why again, or an explanation is given. We already know what God had said about what to name Isaac. In verse 6, though, we read, and Sarah said, God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me. A joy, a monumental joy, that we experience the word laughter being used in disbelief, in shock, and then in utter joy. Amazing joy. And that name would be remembered, and its meaning, however I don't remember reading this until I was looking it up, but throughout his culture, throughout the Hebrew people, throughout the Israelites' history, they would know the name Isaac. They would know the name meaning laughter, meaning great joy, meaning an incredible experience. Again, she said, God has made me laugh. The Complete Jewish Bible translates this saying, Sarah said, God has given me a good reason to laugh. Now everyone who hears about it will laugh with me. It was the name God had instructed Abraham to call their son. After Abraham had laughed, perhaps within his heart, at the thought of having a son with Sarah, the son from whom he would become, for the most part, the father of a multitude. Interestingly, Isaac's name, Laughter, meaning laughter, was never changed. So again, throughout his life and through his descendants, it would have that meaning remembered, and hopefully will be remembered by all of us as well. But next we'll look at the son of Isaac, that is one of the twin sons, who was given a name related to his birth and certain actions later in life. His name was later changed, but he is still referred to and called by that name given to him at birth. It was not a no more of this, now only this, as we'll see. And that is Jacob. Jacob, Genesis chapter 25. Genesis 25. Isaac was 40 years old, in verse 20, I'm sorry. Isaac, Genesis 25, verse 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Eternal for his wife because she was barren. We know the story, right? And the Eternal granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children, she didn't know there was more than one. Remember, they didn't have sonograms back then? She did not know there was more than one within her. But this verse is describing this. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, if all is well, God has blessed me. God has heard the pleading of my husband and has given me a child. If all is well, why am I like this? What's going on? This is troubling. So she went to inquire of the Eternal. And the Eternal said to her, two nations are in your womb. Wow, that's a lot of people in there, huh? Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other. And the older shall serve the younger. And she's probably going, huh? You know, because she's thinking about what she's feeling, and then she's hearing this, knows it has meaning, but is wondering, what's this all about? It's very significant. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed, and that's what's interesting, they say indeed, because she did not know it, except what God had told her. Indeed, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. The first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. The name Esau means hairy. Or that's one of the ways that it is translated. Hairy. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. One of the definitions of the name Jacob is heel catcher. And there's another that we'll see in a little bit. Isaac was 6 years old when she bore him. So he wasn't a young guy, much younger than his father had been when he was born. And we read of Jacob's name having more meaning after he convinced Esau to sell his birthright for a bowl of soup. And then later, when Rebekah and he tricked Isaac into passing along the firstborn's blessing upon Jacob instead of Esau. Genesis 27. Genesis 27 and verse 36. Genesis 27 verse 36, again showing the meaning of the name, the significance that it had. Genesis 27, 36. And Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? Isn't that the fitting name with the meaning that is sometimes translated heel catcher, or a synonym of that? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he has taken away my blessing. Isn't his name the right name? He was given it, and that is his name. Isn't that right? Genesis 32 now, a few pages over, verse 24. Genesis 32, verse 24. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, and we understand this to be an angel of God, recognized as the experience that he had. When he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, and this is again talking about Jacob, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, and that is the angel of God, "What is your name?" Did he know his name? He knew his name. He asked him, "What is your name?" "You say your name. You tell me what your name is." And he said, "Heel catcher." He said, "Jacob." He said, "Supplanter." He said the name that has those meanings, Jacob. And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and men and have prevailed." So the name supplanter, or one who worked things out his own way, one who worked out his own way, an important element added into his name along with his future as Israel, meaning prevailer with God. Prevailer with God. However, it's interesting to see that the name Jacob was still used for this man and still is today. Throughout the Bible, we see that including in the New Testament. That is why some scholars recognize the wording here being different, which we don't really see it clearly in the English. The wording is different here than it was in Genesis 17 in relationship to Abraham and Sarah. Interpret this to mean, "Your name shall no longer only be called Jacob." Your name shall no longer only be called Jacob. We read of Jacob in Hebrews 11, don't we? We read of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And perhaps that adds interest to the reminder that the offspring of Jacob, known as the children of Israel, and we as well, if attempting to achieve things their own way, on their own, would not be naturally inclined to do things God's way. It is only with God's involvement that we indeed can prevail. And that is a reminder that he had and that we should have as well. Again, there are many interesting names and their meanings, which can add to our understanding of the individuals, with God working with them experiencing turning points in their lives, or given a forecast of what God expected of them in their lives ahead. So what is your name? And what comes to mind when people hear it? What comes to mind when people hear your name? In Proverbs 22:1, we read, "A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches." That it should be more important what we are recognized as, what our reputation is, what people think of when they hear our name, than wealth, than gold, than great riches. And what might your name be in the future? Because again, as we've seen, names are very important to God. And he has shown that, and he has used that in history, and is planning to do so in the future as well. Let's turn over to Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 12. And here we see, of course, a prophecy that we are not to dismiss as only relating to those to whom it was spoken, but that it is one that is relating to everyone that God calls and that God has a purpose for in their life at this time, as we are looking forward to, as was mentioned in the sermonette, for the return of Jesus Christ and what we are to be doing in anticipation of that. Revelation 3, verse 12. He who overcomes, and that means all who overcome, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. In other words, he will be solidly there as a part of that temple, that no matter where it goes, is a part of that temple. And I will write on him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. Now that we can see as signifying the setting apart in even a more special way, with God putting his name, the name of the holy city, the new city, Jerusalem, upon those who overcome. But there's even more to it than that. Let's look over at Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2, verse 17. And I am not going to interpret this prophetically, because I can't. But I'm going to read it, and I think all of you will see that there is some meaning there which is very clear, or clear to a degree, of what we have been talking about today, and about our future, about the future of you and me in the eyes of God, in the mouth of God as well. Revelation 2:17. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone. And on the stone, a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it. A new name which no one knows except him who receives it. Now, we could play around with this a lot, I guess. But the way I see this is that this is a special name between God and you and me. A very special name about the relationship that we have, that we actually are developing right now with God. And perhaps that name is solid right now in the mind of God. And then again, perhaps it is not. Perhaps it is something that is being decided upon based on our overcoming, based on our preparation, based on our development as his children, for the time when he will come and give us a special gift, one of those special gifts, I should say, being a special name. Let's look back at what we read again from the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. In the Bible, name is that title, label, designation by which a person, place, or thing can be known or marked out as distinguishable from one another. More fundamentally, however, name is that which, one, reveals the true nature of the bearer. So that to know the name is to know the person. Or, two, designates the relationship that exists between entities, especially between God and his people. What will your name be in the future? Certainly all of us, having been called to God's truth and into a relationship with him and Jesus Christ, are in the process of determining what our name shall be. A name is certainly a very important thing.